Part of the activities, you know, engaging the field, and that field is going to give a result, right? Like that. Now, in that, then, there's going to be the element of, well, what experience does that field generate? What is the experience of being inspired? Right? It means there's being inspired and the feeling of being inspired, right? There's going to be the activities and the experience gained from performing the activities. There's going to be the need that's there and then the experience of gaining that need. Does that make sense? So these all are going to be happening at the same time. So when you're discussing, then you have to be able to discuss both of these. Right? Because the problem is if you discuss only one or the other, it won't be complete. Because the experiences cannot be gained without the field in its operation. And the field in its operation have no meaning outside the experience. You know what I'm saying? The significance of the operation of the field is the experiences gained. Does that make sense? Because if we look at it, ultimately everything that we work for is for the purpose of exchange. Right? And what we gain from that exchange. Does that make sense? The difference will be is that in here, as they were saying, the masculine element will be the operation of the field and the results of that. Right? The feminine will be more the experiential. But they both go together. You can't have one without the other. Does that make sense? Though the emphasis will be on one or the other. The man is doing it because he likes to do it and everything, but his focus is on getting the result. Right? The feminine aspect is on the experience, but they know that that comes through the operation of the external. So therefore, they want that to happen. Does that make sense? So the common ground will be the operation, but the experience will be different. Does that make sense? Like that. So these have to be covered. So then in the introduction, then you're going to have these 6 points that are being made. The spirit in which the Gita should be approached, the purpose of the Gita, the subject matter of the Gita, the process of understanding the Gita, the result of understanding the knowledge presented, going back to Godhead, and how to apply, practically apply this knowledge to obtain the desired results. So in this we see 1 through 4 is Sambandha, 5 is Prayojana, and 6 is Abhideya. In here, this is important to be able to make the difference in the discussion, the description of, the importance of Abhideya, why it should be performed, the importance of Prayojana, why it's there, what is our relationship, and actually how Abhideya is performed, and what is the result. Does that make sense? They're subtle, but it makes the difference between whether it's Sambandha Gyan or whether it's Abhideya and Prayojana. Because Sambandha Gyan, being a relationship, means it describes the whole process. So the elements of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana are all described in Sambandha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes it. Sambandha is the bigger picture. Abhideya and Prayojana are part of it. Right? So relationship is the full picture. And then the operation of that field and results of that field of that are part of it. Does that make sense? There's a subtle point that otherwise we get confused because we see here the spirit in which the Gita should be approached. Okay, so that's would be seen as Sambandha because that's the Prayojana, Prajumna aspect, right? The spirit, whatever is that mood, what is that inspiration that's there, right? Because without that, then it can't be properly applied, right? The verb includes the mood. Right, so that means if the mood's not right, the verb's not going to act properly. Right, the verb isn't just performing the activity; it means time, place, and circumstances have to be included. If they're not included, the verb action will not actually bring around the result you want. Right, so that's the mistake. Many think that I just do the work, I'll get the result. No, you do the work in the right mood, right, according to that place and that circle, then it'll work. Otherwise it won't. So therefore the spirit then is within the Sambandha. So that has to be correct. Otherwise your actual understanding of Sambandha isn't complete. You may have observed the field, you know everything about the field, but if the mood's not right, you will not be able to apply it properly. Right? Therefore, that spirit has to be the first thing, because that's going to be the inspiration for action. So it started there. Right? Our interest in the whole process is prajumna. Our attraction to it is prajumna. Right? Because need will only come once attraction is there. Does that make sense? Only if there's need can there be action. Right? So, and if we study the field, that doesn't mean we'll be inspired. So if you want to start anywhere, you have to start with prajumna. That's why we get involved. We're interested in something, then we study the field. We're interested in it, then we have a need for it. We're interested in it, then we apply it. Right? So that's why then it's first. Then we go to it, because that is within the sambandha there. Then the sambandha, from prajumna, it goes to aniruddha. Right? So until there's that need, there won't be action. Right? So then the same way then in the subtle, then from the spirit you go to the purpose. Right? Because the two go together. Right? So then you have that, you have the purpose. You want to know what's going on. Right? You want to know what will be the result, what you can gain from it. You're inspired by it, and now what you can gain from it and everything, right? Then once that's in place, then you need to know the subject matter. Because if you're going to act, you have to know the subject matter, right? Because you can't perform an activity without actually knowing what you're working with. But now we see is the first thing in place is that whole inspiration about it, the whole mood about it, right? The whole need. So the emotional aspect is the first thing to be approached. So then the spirit is there, which is your sambandha. It means the prajumna aspect of sambandha. Then your purpose, you know, aniruddha. Then it will go back to the subject matter, shankarshan. So now you have a basis. Once that's there, now with those three in place, then abhideya, the process of understanding Gita, can be applied. Does that make sense? Right? So this is, we can see, this is a very nice approach. So even if you're starting something new, you have to inspire people by it. You know, why it's nice and that, why you need this, then what the field is, then how to apply it. Right? So you're going sankarshan, aniruddha, prajumna, aniruddha, sankarshan, and then vasudev. Right? Because there's no, the person doesn't necessarily have an interest in it, doesn't know what it is, so then this is, you have to get them interested. Otherwise you say so many facts and figures, nobody will care. Right? Then, having established all that, then you can get down to the very detailed point of what will be the result and everything. You know? So then that result then will be seen, that will then be, now you have a need for it. So the sambandha is in place, that's strong, now the result is desired, then how to practically apply this knowledge, then you'll actually apply it. Does that make sense? Right? That. Okay, so then, so moving to the first chapter. Chapter 1, observing the armies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Right, so now we have to set the scene. We have to set what is the environment in which this whole subject matter will be studied. Right, you know, so because that's important. Your location is very important. Without the location, then how do you apply anything? Right, you have to have a location to perform an activity. Right, so your field of action has to be established first here. Right, so otherwise, how do you perform an activity? How do you know what is there? Right. So in this others we've taken, we can say, but why didn't we in the introduction start with that field? Right? But this is just so that one can get a basic field had been done, right? Because it'll always be the same process as will go on. They're establishing that there's God, there's a living entity, there's Arjuna, there's all this going on. But the purpose of doing that was so that the mood could be understood properly. Right? So the spirit would be there. So it's just enough given. So that being now established, then now we can look at the bigger scene, what is actually going on in Gita. Right? As the opposing armies stand poised for battle, Arjuna, the mighty warrior, sees his intimate relatives, teachers and friends in both armies ready to fight. and sacrificed their lives. Overcome by grief and pity, Arjuna fails in strength. His mind becomes bewildered, and he gives up his determination to fight. Right? So this is what's going on. Right? This is the mood that's going on. Always have to remember, it has to come back to that combination between what's the facts that are going on and how one emotionally perceives it. Right? So that you have to have that proper balance between both. Generally, you'll see is that the conservatives will put more emphasis on the field itself, the facts. And the liberals will put more on the experience that is gained in that. But without a balance, it can't work. Because the field, you have to deal with it according to the right mood and everything, because the emotions are involved. The personal element is involved. But just to take the personal element, that because they see it like that and take that as fact, no, that's generated by the field. The facts are generating those feelings. Right? So the thing is you can't change the facts because of the feelings. So that's why the feelings must be seen in light of the facts. The facts must be seen in light of the feelings. Then it will be balanced. Because otherwise, this popular thing of, well, you know, how the experiential is, the perception is the reality. But that's nonsense. Right? That is your reality, but that reality is based on illusion. Right? Unless your perception is God, then it's illusory. So to make it, so to take it from the facts and figures of that as fact, now to take the experience and that as fact and leave it at that, and that's all it is. Oh, the person felt bad. You know, so then that's the fact. So nobody should feel bad, therefore the other party was wrong. But were they correct in feeling bad? You know what I'm saying? Is it their right? Because everyone has their rights and obligations. Is it their right to feel bad? What is their obligation in that situation? Right? They just felt that. They didn't apply their intelligence at all. They didn't try to understand the situation they were in. It's just their feelings. Is that their right? Or do they have an obligation that since they're in an environment that has other elements within it, do they have to consider the other elements? And then based on the field of activities, then they're inspired, then they have their need. Or is it simply, they are the field of activities? You understand? This is the mistake in the modern kind of liberal approaches to social understanding, is that it's incomplete, because it's taking into consideration the experiential, which is nice. Right? But by only doing that, it's not practical. And it's also not actually very considerate. Even though we're taking into consideration emotions, they're only taking into consideration one side. They're not actually seeing both. Because if you're going to see both, then you have to go back to the field and go, okay, what is the field and what is everybody's rights and obligations? Then you can decide what it is, what are the actual options of feeling. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So his mood that is here is coming from the field. And so you have to then see, is that field and these moods, do they match? And as we'll see, is this comes up in his idea, they are matched. But Krishna has a different opinion. He's saying, in this environment, the feelings you have are not correct. Right? So then this whole process of Krishna consciousness is how to actually see the field so that you actually know what is the proper feelings to have. Otherwise, so many, you can have any feelings you want. It doesn't mean that you're going to get any benefit from them. Okay. This first chapter is called Vishada Yoga, which means yoga of despair. When a pious person is in adverse situation, he turns his attention to God. Thus, the calamities in life act as an impetus for spiritual progress, are appropriately called yoga. So this yoga of despair we see is that, because the question comes up is, why would this be called yoga? Because you could say, oh, this is just, you know, how you say, Arjuna, you know, Arjuna's in Maya, right? But the point is that he is turning to the Lord. That's the whole point. That's what defines a sura. as opposed to an asura. English is so weird. Asura. This is what defines asura, you know, as opposed to an asura. Same word, right? I guess that's why previously they'd use an. You know, this is describing an sura, as opposed to a sura. You know what I'm saying? Something like that. So, okay. So, the thing is that he's turning to the Lord. That's what means sura. Sura turns to the Lord when they have problems. And asura doesn't turn to the Lord. They always think, I'll work it out myself. Even if they can't work it out at all, still they'll have, you know, some hope to work it out themselves. Like that. You know. Or they'll think, because I can't work it out, it can't be worked out. And then they'll, you know, give up. Like that. But here is that means he's having problems, but he's turning to the Lord. That's the whole thing. That's what makes it yoga. So that's the whole point, is whatever situation we're in that's not favorable, then it doesn't mean that we won't be able to connect it to the Lord. That's an important element. Otherwise, we'll think, okay, Gita's nice, but how does it apply to me? No, whatever situation we're in, if it's a problem, you can still turn to the Lord. Right? This is the science of giving. The science of how to turn to the Lord in a situation that's not ideal, which means the material world. Right? There is no ideal situation in the material world other than the fact that you've connected it to the Lord. Does that make sense? So the material world doesn't stand on its own as something special and auspicious other than its connection to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Very important thing to be convinced of is that the only value in the material world is its connection to the Lord. Anything not connected is not valuable because it's illusion. Anything that is connected is valuable because it's not illusion. Does that make sense? Okay. So now we have the in the grouping of the verses, verse 1 to 11, 12 to 20, 21, 26, 27, 46. So 1 to 11, the doubts of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana's attempt to consolidate his army. Right, because Dhritarashtra is worried because his sons aren't necessarily very pious. The Pandava's sons are, and it's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is an auspicious place. Right, so therefore he's a little worried about, you know, that two parts of piety against, you know, impiety are going to be successful. Then 12 to 20, signs of victory for the Pandavas, right? How the very auspicious elements that are coming up because of their, you know, Dhritarashtra has done what he's done, but now the Pandavas do. Then Arjuna confronted with his attachments. Now everything's auspicious and nice and all that, but we must remember that auspicious and inauspicious are still based on attachments. Otherwise, we wouldn't call it auspicious and inauspicious. It's, you know, what's favorable in relation to Krishna, what's not favorable. You know, which can also be defined as auspicious and inauspicious. But in general, we don't. We'll say it's auspicious means we're going to get a good result. Right? It's inauspicious means we'll get a bad result. You know, but it hasn't been defined that, oh, it's auspicious so we'll get a nice result for Krishna. It's inauspicious, we won't get a nice result for Krishna. Right? It's not generally seen that one uses it that way. Then his reasons not to fight. Then in here we have 27 to 29, his compassion that he has or misplaced. Then 30 to 35, his desire for enjoyment. Then 44 to 45, his fear of sinful reactions. And then his last point is then 37 to 43, destruction of family tradition. Okay, so verses 1 to 11. The doubts of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana's attempt to consolidate his army. Verse 1. Bhagavad Gita, as most Vedic scriptures, opens with a question. This signifies that the transcendental knowledge is transmitted through the process of inquiry. Right? Because basically all the Vedic literatures are conversations. And so that's going to mean there's question and answer. There's some question that's there. There's something that is to be discussed. And so that itself is the basis of it. So what it opens with, you can understand that's your main topic here. Right. So then, okay. So the question Dhritarashtra asks is bizarre, as Srila Prabhupada explains. Quote, now the word is used, yuyutsavaha. They assembled for fighting. Then what is the use of asking, kim akuravata? Then what will they do? Okay. It is natural to conclude that they assemble for fighting. There must be fighting. But why, he was asking, kim akuravata? The suspect was that because the parties assembled in Dharma Kshetra, they might have changed their ideas. Lecture, Bhagavad Gita 2.1, Ahmedabad, December 6, 1972. Right? In other words, they've assembled for fighting, now what are they going to do? You know? That would be like saying, oh, they all sat down for dinner and everything, and all the food was there, so what did they do? You know? You know, it's kind of absurd. You wouldn't ask that. But the question comes up, because it's Dharma Kshetra, then there's a worry that something has changed. Because it's a religious, so because basically he can understand the war is not religious from Duryodhana's side. It's not; he doesn't have a good foundation. The Pandavas do, so did it change? Dhritarashtra hopes that the pious influence of the holy place of pilgrimage will not discourage his demoniac sons to fight, and will not give additional strength to the righteous Pandavas. On the other hand, Dhritarashtra wishes that the Pandavas decline to fight with their relatives because of compassion and detachment. Right. So he's expecting that they will decide to just naturally just go off to the forest and not fight because they don't want to destroy the whole family. Right? He's also, here, is worried that his sons, being in a religious place, will give up their determination to fight. This is always the enigma, you could say, about Dhritarashtra. Is he is a saintly king. Right? He's referred to many times as Rajarshi. Because he is very well trained and very knowledgeable in the scriptures and what is to be done and what is not to be done. But by his own admittance, we see in the Krishna book, that he is so attached to his son that his son is interested in impiety. Therefore, he becomes inclined towards or supportive of impiety. Right? We don't, you know, so one could say is, okay, then, okay. In the natural, okay, that would be your natural material application of attachment. Is that whatever you're attached to, then it's fine. And needs no development or that other than its own natural direction it wants to go. But if we're being, how do you say, more appropriately situated, you know, either piously or properly than Krishna consciously, is that one out of attachment accepts, you know, the person and the situation, but it's not that one feels that it is okay. It is what is maybe applied now, but one is always looking for an opportunity in which one can make adjustments in that and bring it to a higher standard or to the proper standard. Does this make sense? Right? In other words, the child is, very self-centered, wants to do anything, whatever it wants, and this and that. Out of attachment, one goes along with it, but it doesn't mean that one considers that this is the ideal standard. Right? One knows that if there's an opportunity to train them in the finer points of human existence, that will be done. And as they can function in that way, then that's encouraged more. When they can't function in that way, that's dealt with, that's accepted in that way. But there's always thinking that there's the opportunity to adjust it in the future. Does that make sense? So that would be the proper. The other thing is to say, no, they're self-centered, that's a good thing. And then, you know, you argue with other people about what's wrong with my kid being self-centered and everything like this. You know, that's natural. You know, get over it. You know, doing all these kind of things like that. That would be wrong. But so we see here is Dhritarashtra has, out of his attachment, accepted his son's position as okay. And therefore, he is, in his own mind, is pushing for that. But he'll externally go through the route because he knows what's to be done. So he'll say, yes, these things are there and everything. And so we can see is that when the gambling match is there, he's fully supportive of his son, even if he's doing all nonsense. Right? Only when he sees that the jackals are in his deity room and are howling, then he knows this is a total destruction of him and his dynasty. Then he decides to, do the right thing and, oh yes, I was just testing you all and now this and that, and you've passed much better than my sons and all that. And so therefore I want to give everything back to you. Right? Because if that was actually the position, that's what he wanted. He was looking for something. Then he would turn to Duryodhana and see, what you're doing like that, we can't support this anymore. But as soon as the son says no, you call them back for another match. You know, like that. Then he agrees. So the problem is he's always agreeing. Because his attachment, therefore, is unhealthy. Right? It's not a healthy attachment. It's inspiring him to, therefore, improve the quality of it. You know, in other words, attachment, or let's say the element of his attachment, is the medium through which he's going to elevate himself. Does that make sense? Because in this world, then it's going to be the medium of your attachment or detachment that you're going to use for your elevation. Right? Because this is what we're connected with, the material world. So, therefore, if we're going to be successful, we have to dovetail these attachments and detachments in the Lord's service. Right? Because otherwise, what do we have? So, once as we get attached to the Lord, and attached to his service, then that becomes the prominent element. But until it does, then the things that we're attached to become mediums for that. Does that make sense? So he's not connecting it. He's not using it in any way for his elevation. It's only for his own and his family's degradation. Right? So it's not healthy. Right? Attachment's not the problem. It's whether it's being connected to the Lord or not. Being connected, nice. It's not being connected, that's a problem. Yeah. Before the war started, Dhritarashtra sent Sanjaya to the Pandavas with a similar message. Sanjaya pleaded that since the Pandavas are still our saintly persons, they should refrain from the battle and live by begging. What they will gain by slaying their relatives, it is better to give up the kingdom than to kill Bhishma and Drona. Thus Sanjaya introduced the same arguments which later on Arjuna developed in this first chapter of Gita. Lord Krishna, who also presented in the assembly, rejected the proposal. Right? Because the thing is you're saintly. Why you should bother in this fighting? So it all sounds very good. But the point is why are these saintly persons being put in this environment? If we're really looking at Shastra and really looking at what's pious, then why would Duryodhana be keeping them away from their half of the kingdom? Right? Technically, they deserve the whole kingdom. Duryodhana doesn't deserve to be king. Dhritarashtra does not deserve to be king. Only Yudhishthira deserves. So we're not talking about the whole. They're already in their piety because of the family and all this, agreeing to half. But now they're using the so-called, philosophy of the Vedic literatures to try to make them give up everything and go to the forest. You're pious, you can do this. We're not pious, therefore we're attached, we keep it all. Like that. So this misapplication, one should always be very, very careful of. Like that. So we see Krishna rejected this, and then Sanjaya is bringing this up again in the discussion. You know, because Arjuna's, having those kind of feelings and all that. Which is what Dhritarashtra wanted them to have in the beginning. So therefore he's asked, is the effect of the holy place having some change in the mind of the Pandavas, not in the mind of Duryodhana? He very much doesn't want Duryodhana to change his mind, but wants the Pandavas to change theirs. Right? You know, instead of them, both change. Okay, we don't fight, but, we'll give you half your kingdom. The Pandavas say, okay, we won't fight for the kingdom. And Duryodhana says, okay, we'll give you half the kingdom. He doesn't want any of that. Sometimes unscrupulous men try to deceive saintly persons in a similar manner. They persuade holy men that it is not worthy to fight for transitory material things, and that is much better to pursue solitary bhajan. Lord Krishna does not approve his devotees being fooled in such a way. Right? So this shouldn't be used. We should be very, very careful about that. This is why if you know the philosophy, one can avoid this. Right? Otherwise, one is not going to be able to. Because people play on the finer sentiments of the devotees, right? To try to get them to do things that are technically correct, but for the situation that's there, it's not the appropriate thing because the other party is misusing it for their own purposes. It's not being used for Krishna. They expect you to take up the devotional mentality, but the situation won't be used in the Lord's service. Right? The point is that's what you were saying before, this dual line that's there is that both the environment itself, the activities that are there must be in line with Krishna consciousness and the mood must be in line with Krishna consciousness. Right? So the activities of Krishna consciousness, the experience is Krishna consciousness. Then it's complete. But here what they're expecting is the Pandavas by experience to be Krishna conscious but not perform Krishna conscious activities. Right? They may be Krishna conscious activities in a particular situation. We do see that the Pandavas at the end of the Mahabharata do go to the forest as Vanaprastha. So that would be the correct thing. But at this point, they're not Vanaprasthas. So it would not be correct to go to the forest. Does that make sense? Right? So it doesn't mean that it's not a correct activity in the correct situation. So what's being done here is that Dhritarashtra is expecting one particular behavior in the wrong situation. He's trying to match the two, you know, because you want what you want from everything, you know, the element of, you know, Madhukari, like the bee, you know, taking the best from each one of them, meaning what's best for you, not for Krishna. You know, it's like that. You know, it's like, in other words, we have the, you know, distinction and the authority to advise everybody on everything, like the Brahmin. We have the political authority, you know, and control of the Kshatriya. We have the money and all that of the Vaishya. At the same time, we have, you know, the not worrying about anything else other than your own senses and emotions of the Shudra, right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's not the way it's supposed to work, right? What is the situation? Then there's the appropriate thing to do. Otherwise, all these things are correct in this situation, but we must be able to connect both the proper mood with the proper situation. Right? That's why situation must be studied. Then you know what are the options for the mood. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
What's the reason for Dhritarashtra actually now expecting Pandavas may change their mind, but he doesn't want Duryodhana to change his mind? He wouldn't be happy if Duryodhana decides, I'm not going to fight. It's just for the ego that it would be like...
I think it's more than ego, because ego will be in your relationship. It's more to do with his attachment. He's just so attached to his son, and his son wants these things, that he actually sincerely hopes that that'll happen. Everybody will just change.
But he sees the destruction of his son and everybody else. So he knows
But that's the point, is attachment is the basis of action. Right? Knowledge, you're supposed to act with knowledge. That's proper action. But the reason that you actually are applying that knowledge in action is due to attachment. It's due to need. But so once it comes to attachment, the intelligence isn't being applied to whether that situation is correct or not. Intelligence can be applied to the performance of the activity to get the particular result you're attached to, but whether that result or that attachment you're attached to is worthwhile, that has been left behind. That's the difference. Inspiration means the intelligence is still working. Right, because you see the situation, you see the options, you see whether to be involved in them or not. You know, so the intelligence is still there, the options are still open. Once it comes to attachment, the intelligence is not functioning as to whether it should be there or not, whether it's valuable or not. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So he's basically not hoping that maybe because he sees that it may affect his attachment or relationship with Duryodhana?
No, he's attached to Duryodhana. He wants him to be successful. And so he wants to be successful, just like Arjuna wants to enjoy the kingdom with all the relatives. Same way as Dhritarashtra wants his son to enjoy the kingdom with all the relatives. So by having the battle, then, you know, they're sure they're going to win. Otherwise, why would they go? But that means there'll be a lot less relatives to enjoy it with. Right? So it's not as ideal. Of course, Duryodhana will still be the king, but, you know, there won't be as much family and friends as you would like. So if the Pandavas would just be influenced by the holy place and therefore give up their desire to fight and be so materialistic and just be, since they're saintly, to be, you know, satisfied in begging, you know, which is nice if they're Brahmins. You know, if they were Brahmins and they come to this point of fighting and that you would hope that it would come and there would be no fight, that would be correct. But they're not, they're Kshatriyas. So therefore fighting is their dharma. You know, they don't beg. Kshatriyas don't beg for a living. It's not allowed. You know, that's why the Pandavas, they were presenting themselves as Brahmins, but they were also living the lifestyle of Brahmins. It wasn't that they were, you know, going out and begging as Brahmins, and then back at the room they had their attitude and everything as Kshatriyas. No, they were living fully the lifestyle of Brahmins. Right? Because they weren't married, they were snatikas. So technically they can do it. It's not against the rules. Right? After graduation, generally a Kshatriya and a Vaishya will immediately get married. They won't go out on pilgrimage. They'll do that later in life. You know, like that is vanaprastas and this and that. But Brahmas generally, not generally, the option is there and quite often taken. You know, it's not uncommon that after graduating, then they'll go out on pilgrimage and go study more in other places and all that. So they'll live the life of a snatika, which is a brahminical life. Like the brahmachari lifestyle is a brahminical lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Right? So the same way snatika is still a brahminical lifestyle. But it's not against the rules for Kshatriyas and Vaishyas to follow it, though they generally never do. That's why then when the Arjuna and Bhima and Krishna, they went to see Jarasandha dressed as brahmanas, then he made the point, you're Kshatriyas, why you're dressed as brahmanas and, you know, going out on, you know, like on, you're on pilgrimage. He says, then Krishna said, it's not wrong for Kshatriyas to be snatikas. So they came as snatikas. So they're living the lifestyle, so they're accepted that way. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, so that's the thing, is that it can be accepted if you take the whole package. But the problem is most people don't do it that way. And it's not something they can maintain, so therefore it won't be appropriate. You know what I'm saying? So that's why, depending on the situation you're born in or this or that, that doesn't matter. If you can live a particular lifestyle, then it should be accepted that way. Mm-hmm. Does that sound sense? Yeah. Okay, so we'll end here. Then we'll continue tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jaya Nitya Gaura Premanandi.